Mark Barnes of Mark Barnes and Associates, Jeff Knox, who's director of the Firearms Coalition and founder of GunVoter.org, and Larry Pratt, executive director of Gun Owners of America. Gentlemen.
Good morning, Gun Lobby. Let's try that one more time. Good morning, Gun Lobby.
Good morning.
All right. As we always say, you are the Gun Lobby. It's not the guys in the suits that sit up at the front table. It's you guys. You're the ones that make the difference. The federal outlook has been something interesting for this year. You might notice that I'm a little stiff as I look around the room. My neck doesn't swivel as much. I just had spine surgery. And that was just the least of my problems this year. The horrible tragedy in Newtown really set us back and moved us forward. What really came out of that, the really apparent result of that, is the threat represented by Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg, after Aurora, when he saw that nothing happened, was outraged. And he and his minions started lining up ducks, waiting for the next event, prepared to launch a full-scale attack the moment some crazy lunatic coward pulled a heinous act. And they did. They came at us, guns blazing, and came very close to tipping us over. The initial reaction was that we were going down, that something bad was going to happen as far as gun rights were concerned. It was a testament to you and to your paid lobbyists and volunteers around the country who came together like I have never seen them come together before, solidified, put up a solid front almost unanimously, stood very firm, said absolutely not, no. That worked, and it worked surprisingly well. We were very relieved with what happened. But now, what we have in the wake of all of this is Bloomberg and the various groups that he's funding, because no longer is Bloomberg only funding Mayors Against Illegal Guns. He is sponsoring paid staff at the Brady campaign and at Moms Demand something or other. And at We're Mad That You Have Guns and Hoplophobia Incorporated, whatever these organizations. He's finding people. The poor people who lost someone and were hurt and had their hearts broken by this cowardly lunatic in Connecticut and the cowardly lunatic in Colorado, he's paying to fly these poor people around the country to cry in the offices of representatives that you've elected. My own Senator Jeff Flake in Arizona. Jeff's a little flaky, but he stood fairly firm, and especially when you consider that he's the junior senator and he's got good old John McCain guiding him. But they have been hammering him with people in his office crying on his carpet ever since he cast that vote, hammering him with radio and television ads of what a heartless, cruel, evil man he is for not voting for the simple, simple, moderate, common sense legislation, Manchin-Toomey, that would just simply make criminals out of shooting buddies who wanted to sell guns to each other. This conglomeration of anti-rights activism, coordinated by Bloomberg and paid staff of New York City, is, in my opinion, the greatest threat that we face right now. We at the Firearms Coalition are focusing on Mr. Bloomberg and his activities. I am making it no secret. I'm making it very clear that I would like to see the name Bloomberg be a poison pill, a pariah in the political community, that anything that can remotely be connected to Bloomberg money will be dead on arrival, that any way that he wants to send his dollars to the anti-rights movement or any anti-rights candidate, he's going to have to go through back channels in order to do it, because people hate him. That's what I want to see. And right now, after we slammed him in Colorado, the next step is Virginia. I hope people are paying attention to what's going on in Virginia. Terry McAuliffe, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton's good buddy, is running against Ken Cuccinelli. And Terry McAuliffe is being backed by Michael Bloomberg. So that's where we stand now. Larry has arrived, and so we've got our full panel now. I'm Jeff Knox with the Firearms Coalition, firearmscoalition.org. Stop by, visit me sometime. Catch me around here. I really want to shake everybody's hand. Say hello to all of you. Find out what you're doing in your state. Thank you.
It's like FedEx just in time.
Yes.
Larry? Well, this is the new 9 o'clock. That's what my schedule said. Sorry to create tension.
I was worried, Larry.
Yeah, you would have been at a loss for words. All right.
Don't worry, Larry. It's 9 o'clock somewhere.
Maybe Australia, where they do half hours. I don't know. Well, sorry I couldn't get Shotgun Joe here to give us a demonstration on firearm handling, but we'll just have to do what we can. You know, isn't it interesting? Both the Republicans and the Democrats are really ticked with Senator Cruz. They don't like their ruling class being challenged, and he's not playing by the rules. And of course, that's why I think everybody in here loves him. Why, he's trying to tear down everything that we've built. I hope so. Yeah. I sure hope so. Let me try to give you a little inside baseball. When the Toomey gun control bill was defeated, it was the result of the leadership of Senator Cruz and Mike Lee. And what they did in that filibuster, they made it known to Reid and to McConnell that they were going to try to put the Thune National Concealed Carry Bill on as an amendment. And that's why they put the vote level at 60, because they knew that if they had something under 60 at, say, a 50% vote level, it was going to get on because he'd already gotten 53 votes in the Senate on an earlier vote. And so that's why they had to go for 60. And at 60, they just couldn't move. And it finally got stuck thanks to that strategy, thanks to Senator Thune. Now, this Toomey bill, which was a national gun registry, they were talking about expanding the background check. Does anybody after NSA think that a background check name and address is not being put on a central list? Really? Well, I want to come and give you a hug if you do. And so now I think after the revelation of what the NSA had been doing, that puppy is dead. We're going to make sure it is if we can do anything that has to be done. But I think it is dead. After all that, Senator Lee had a meeting in his conference room with about 40 different groups, yours truly included, those that had been opposing Zero Care, as I think it should be called, not Obamacare. He is a zero, and it will be Zero Care. We've been opposing Zero Care because it's an anti-gun bill in its core. You know what happened to the veterans back in 08 when Bush signed that into law? They started getting their names put on the instant background check.
Oh, you had a happy pill. You had a mild disorder. We're going to zap you.
Nobody gets convicted of anything. No violence. No threat of violence. They just get their guns taken away. What a cool way to steal people's guns. It's all for your health. Now, by the way, the veterans are at least up to 165,000 of them, no guns. They've had knocks on the door. They've had to surrender them. This is serious stuff. These guys keep looking for ways to get our guns, not even in the name of gun control. It's just for your own good. One of the things that was encouraging in this late July meeting in Lee's office was that he made the point that in fighting the Toomey gun control bill, at the same point then that we were at Lee's meeting at the end of July, we would have lost if the vote had been held at that time. And we would probably still lose the Zero Care vote now. Obviously, the Senate buckled. Maybe the Senate doesn't hear what the House has been hearing, but the House got a haircut over the recess. Even guys that were opposed to it were being told, don't come back if you vote for it. Because people understand, and gun owners understand, that this thing is an attack on our guns as well as the rest of our liberty. I think we're going to end up prevailing, but it's only going to be if those phone lines continue to melt down. So hopefully you all who are obviously activists or you wouldn't be here will get other people to do what I'm hoping you've already done and just melt those phones down several times a day. We can kill gun control when they hear from the people. And one last little note on a kind of a different slant. Washington is dysfunctional, as you know. But many county sheriffs have been elected, and they're telling Washington, don't cross the county line. One quick example, and I will bid you adieu. One of our members is Brad Rogers, sheriff of Elkhart County, Indiana. He was approached by his local, one of his local farmers, and the guy said, you know, the FDA has been on my case unremittingly. They hate raw milk. You know, it's so dangerous. You read about people dying from it all the time. And he said, they're at the point where they're likely to confiscate my equipment. I'm in court, in federal court. It's really getting bad. Well, Rogers went out to the farm to make sure it wasn't some little house of horrors with dead animals rotting all over the place, which was, of course, not the case, as a raw milk producer, the guy was keeping the place very, very pristine, really. So Rogers went back to his office and he emailed the head attorney for the FDA, and he said, "If you, I don't want you to put your foot on this farmer's land again, or I will arrest you." And she wrote back and said, "Well, if you try that, we'll arrest you." And his response was, "Game on." That game has been on now for 2 years, and there's not even been the first quarter. They haven't come. So a sheriff can protect us even when Washington allows something as goofy as the FDA to operate. Thank you.
Good morning. Mark Barnes, and I am your lawyer, lobbyist in Washington, D.C. for the Citizens Committee. And it's just a pleasure to be here in Texas. I love this state, and I want to echo what Jeff and Larry have said this morning about Senator Cruz. I also want to add a little bit to what Jeff said about the Bloomberg team. A couple of interesting notes. First of all, it's a much wider group than you might expect. For example, the top person who was on Bloomberg's staff in terms of legislative thinking and legislative drafting was hired as the top anti-gun person in the city of Chicago by Rahm Emanuel. So there is a very definite network across the United States where the professional staff are being shared and hired and promoted to work against our interests. Number two, and I know that Jeff knows this, but I think it you didn't have enough time to point out this little nugget. As many of you have read, the mayor contributed over $200 million to Johns Hopkins to establish, in my opinion, the world's largest anti-gun think tank, where they are hiring, now get this, and we all know how expensive hiring a tenured professor can be at an institution. So they plan on hiring up to 40 professors to strategize, research, and write on firearms ownership. So it's extraordinarily serious. We, in turn, at the grassroots level, are going to have to give back in kind and support more and more young people, critical thinkers, and writers who can counter this over a period of time. We have to fight fire with fire. It's as simple as that. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. They're in the process of hiring up now. And that has always been a center, by the way, Johns Hopkins University, of anti-gun thinking. But now, you know, they're indefinitely endowed with the money that they need to go forward and try to hurt us. I want to share with you a personal perspective on why the last 8 months for me have been insightful. I used to think I was a pretty smart guy. I now consider myself to be a totally reformed moderate. And I used to think I was pretty hardcore, but I'll tell you what, it was Barack Obama who's driven me over the edge, and I never have thanked him yet. Because when I tell you this story, you're going to understand that the two most dangerous people in charge of public policy in the room are Barack Obama and Joe Biden. I grew up in the Reagan administration, and I had a lot of good mentors. They were, you know, terrific in terms of teaching me about public policy. And, you know, we have to reach out to a lot of different sectors of America to make our case. And that is an obligation. Public persuasion is an obligation that we have. We have to use it well. So I had a lot of people who taught me about public persuasion, and they also taught me the difference between avoiding doing what looks stupid, doing what is actually stupid, knowing the difference between the two and trying to pick something that will advance your agenda in a practical and thoughtful way. And that is not occurring, very obviously. We all know that in the White House, but it's even worse than you might think. So let me tell the story. I represent a couple of the organizations that are the corporate sponsors here, and I'm proud to do so. One is Century Arms. And for many years, starting in 1989, Century, among other U.S. importers, have fought to bring back U.S. military origin firearms to the United States, particularly the M1 carbine and the M1 Garand. In 1989, Congress amended the Arms Export Control Act and said to the State Department, yes, it's true, we don't want our foreign allies to give away tanks and heavy military weapons, but it's totally appropriate to bring back curio and relic firearms to the U.S. for the collecting community. So here you go, State, here's the amendment. And the State Department said, well, you didn't draft it so well. There's another part of the Arms Export Control Act that says that we have to give our consent to the foreign government to sell to the private U.S. importing community. And we fought the State Department from 1989 to 2005 on implementing the law. And finally, in 2005, during the Bush presidency, the State Department changed the policy and said, well, tell you what, we'll let them come in on a case-by-case review, and we'll presume approval unless there's something else that would incline us to reject it. Nevertheless, by that time, there wasn't much left around the world. There was a lot in Korea. There's some guns in Uruguay, Jordan, and elsewhere that need to come back to the home country. But very few things were being approved. Finally, in about 2011 and 2012, the Korean government said, look, we have 80,000 M1 Garands we would like to sell back into America. And at first, the State Department denied it. Then they changed their mind and approved them preliminarily going forward. It was going back and forth for 2 years, but finally, the Koreans were excited. They were going to be able to offer a tender to the American importing community. Several companies competed. Century won the bid. And thereupon, our odyssey began. And what happened was that we now had to go and make a case along with the South Korean government for the retransfer. And here is the interesting part. ATF, the State Department, and the Justice Department and the other agencies said, M1 Garand, that's really not a problem. It's not a crime gun. It's not even on Dianne Feinstein's assault weapons list. So, we don't have a problem with this. So that took about 8 months to get the entire package together, and then Newtown hit. I got a call from the State Department one day, and they said, you know, normally the approval process would be over, and we would just give you the approval, and the undersecretary would have to sign the documents. Then you can take the Mother May I permission slip over to ATF and get the import permit, and then this whole transaction can go forward. But out of an abundance of caution, we're going to send this case over to the White House. So the case starts its way over at the White House policy apparatus. And after about 4 or 5 months, we decided time to turn up the heat. Let's see what we can do to get this off the dime. Because really, we did not believe that it would be possible for the policy apparatus in the White House to make such a serious political miscalculation. But I was wrong. And here's how we turned up the heat. People that might normally be a little bit shy to support our interests were not so shy in this case. Senator Leahy, the Democratic senior senator from Vermont. Yes, that's Century's home state. But nevertheless, the senator got behind it in a big way and lobbied personally to the White House to get this deal through. The Democratic governor of Vermont, not known to be pro-gun, wrote a letter with Senator Leahy to the White House explaining all the merits of the transaction. It's not an assault weapon. It's not a crime gun. Our veterans and collectors enjoy shooting this type of rifle. The CMP program already sells it to the American public. I mean, you know, point after point. Senator Manchin weighed in. And I think Jeff will well understand that the senator's point was simple, which is, if you haven't noticed, things have been a little bit difficult promoting your agenda in Congress. This would be a good way for you to make it even harder to do that if you do something that just doesn't make any sense. I thought that was a great argument. But none of that apparently had any impact because just a few weeks ago, Joe Biden announced that we need to prevent military-grade weapons from returning to the United States. And it was really quite remarkable. And I actually was able to find some of the people in the policy process that had been advising him. And to say the least, they were not only remarkably uninformed, but just had no idea how you and many, many other Americans would look at it and just shake your head and go, I can't even believe that this is even a necessary decision or even a necessary topic. So at the end of the day, millions of Americans, military veterans and others, are being denied access to what I thought before wasn't even a gun of concern. But as many of you have pointed out, to our adversaries, every gun is a gun of concern. And the bottom line is, as far as I'm concerned, the only way out of this box is through the ballot box. And so over the next 2 years, as we go into the midterm elections with Congress and finally a presidential election, there is no doubt in my mind that I'm going to use every ounce of my effort to throw the rascals out and get right-thinking people in. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Battles are something that we all need to pay very, very, very close attention to.